Oh, man gyana timinatnasya gyananjana shalakhaya chakshurun minatam yena tasmai shigurave nama Shri Chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakada mahyam dadati swapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri Tapadagamalam, Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam, Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam, Sadvaitam Savadutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padan, Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Itinamine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya deshatarine vancha kalpatrubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitana pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama. He Krishna karuna sindhu dhinabando jagatpate gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namostute tapta kanchana gaurangi radhe vrindavaneshwari rishabhanu sude devi pranamami hari priye jaya shri krishna chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shivasadi, Gauravaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda This morning we're reading from Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita from Madhya Lila chapter 20 The Lord instructs Sanatana Goswami, and we're reading, starting with verse 355, and I was told one could continue through 359. So we'll see what happens. This verse that we're chanting is from the Bhagavatam, so we get two for the price of one, Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavatam. Yasya avatara gyayante sharire svasharirina taisthayar atulyati shayai Viryaye dehishva sangatai. Yasya, whose avatara incarnations Jayante can be known. Sharirishu among the living entities. Asharirina of the Lord who has no material body. Tai tai, all those. Atulya, incomparable. Atishayai, extraordinary. Viryai, by prowess. You all know what prowess means? No. Huh? No, it's not pride. Yeah, it's like heroism, power,
prowess.
Excellence. Prowess is a kind of excellence, I'd say. Dehishu, among the living entities. Asangatai, impossible. Yes. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord does not have a material body. Yet he descends among human beings in his transcendental body as an incarnation. Therefore, it is very difficult for us to understand who is an incarnation. Only by his extraordinary prowess and uncommon activities, which are impossible for embodied living entities, can one partially understand the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, verse 34. I'll continue to read because we want to get the thread of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's argument here. Sharupa lakkana ara tatashta lakkana e dui lakkane vastu jane munigana. By two symptoms, personal characteristics and marginal characteristics, the great sages can understand an object. Akriti, prakriti, sharup, sharupa lakana, karja dara gyan, e tatashta lakana. Bodily features, nature, and form are the personal characteristics. That's sarup lakshana. Knowledge of his activities provides the marginal characteristics, tatasta lakshana. Bhagavatarambe vasa mangala charane parameshar nirupilo e dui lakkane. In the auspicious invocation at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva has described the Supreme Personality of Godhead by these symptoms. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj quotes Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 1. Janmadyasya yatonvayaditaratas chartesva avigya swarat tene brahma ridaya adigavaye muhyanti yatsuraya. Tejo vari medang yata vinimayo yatra trisargo mrisha damna svena sada nirasta guhakang satyang param dimahi. O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth, and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent, because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. And then Srila Prabhupada gives a purport. Shall we read his purport? This verse, quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 111, links the Srimad Bhagavatam with the Vedanta Sutra with the words, Janmadyasya Yataha. It is stated that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is the absolute truth beyond the material creation. This has been accepted by all acharyas, even Shankaracharya, the most elevated impersonalist, says in the beginning of his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, Narayana paro avyaktat. Prabhupada likes to quote that. Even Shankara says, when this material creation is not yet manifested from the Mahatattva, it is called avyakta. And when it is demonstrated from that, when it is demonstrated from that total energy, it is called vyakta. Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beyond this vyakta avyakta, manifested and unmanifested material nature. This is the chief qualification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he assumes a particular incarnation. Krishna tells Arjuna that although they both took birth many, many times before, Krishna remembers everything about his previous appearances, but Arjuna does not remember. Since Krishna is beyond the cosmic creation, he is in the exalted position of being able to remember everything in the past. Everything within the cosmic creation has a material body, but Krishna, being beyond the material cosmic creation, always has a spiritual body. He imparted Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahma. Although Brahma is the most important and exalted personality within the universe, he could not remember what he did in his past life. Couldn't even remember what he did the previous day. Krishna had to remind him through the heart. When Lord Brahma was thus inspired, he was able to create the entire universe, remembering everything about the past and inspiring Lord Brahma to create our vivid examples of the characteristics called Sharupa Lakshana and Tatastha Lakshana. So ends Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. The chapter is called The Lord Instructs Sanatana Goswami. Where was Lord Chaitanya instructing Sanatana Goswami? Shishirana Gopinaki. Where? Somewhere in India. Huh? Where? in Varanasi. And where did he instruct Rupa Goswami? Prayag. So who did he instruct first? Little quiz. Sunday morning quiz. Rupa Goswami? Are you sure? Yes? Okay. Why? Why are you so sure? What? Oh, okay. Any other reason? Okay. There's another reason. The other reason is that Lord Chaitanya was, where was he headed? From where to where? Yes, from Vrindavan back to Jagannath Puri. So, which city comes first, Prayag or Varanasi, if you're coming from Vrindavan? Prayag comes first, right. So it had to be Rupa Goswami first. Now you, don't you feel enlightened by that information? Anyway, I think it's nice to, you know, be conscious, be aware of the situation, the actual, the scene where Lord Chaitanya is there with Sanatana Goswami, and they're speaking about all of these somewhat technical, sometimes details about the subject of avatara, about the various descents. The word avatara means, ava means down, and tara means crossing. Cross the down crossers and the avataras. This word has kind of entered into the Western vocabulary in recent years, isn't it? There was a film, about 3 years ago? It was called Avatar. Yeah? And before that, everyone was doing computer things with avatars. So when the film was going around in Slovenia, we organized a public program called 10 Avatars. And the devotees managed to get rental of two quite large, full-size billboards in the city for the program. So it was kind of fun to see that. You're talking about avatar. We talk about 10 avatars. Yeah. The word avatar is sometimes translated by Srila Prabhupada, often actually, as incarnation, and we may wonder about that. The word incarnation has a Christian flavor to it. It's a word which is associated with the understanding about what we might call the descent of Jesus, who is identified as the Christ. And so this one person who is coming some 2,000 years ago, 2015 or 16 years ago, I think they say he was actually born in the year 3 or 4 before Christ. Anyway, figure that out. So they sort of make a claim on that term, incarnation, because the theology in Christianity is very much emphasizing that the Lord or the Son of God is taking on a human form, a physical body, incarnation, karna. means flesh, right? In Latin languages, is that right? So the emphasis there is on the physicality. We may wonder whether this is the whether this is the best word. There's many discussions. Different theologians have explored, and they've said avatar, no, not incarnation. Why? Because, for one thing, we understand avatar is completely spiritual. So even appearing in this world, there's no question of it of him or her having a material body of flesh. The general subject, what's being discussed here Lakshana Vichara in verse 354. Lakshana Vichara. Vichara means consideration. Lakshana means characteristics. So the discussion is about the characteristics of the avatars. And there's all kinds of elaboration about how to understand who is an avatar. And one way this is done in the Bhagavatam is by listing. So all the way in already in the beginning, in chapter 3 of Canto 1, we get a list of how many, 28 avatars. There are also other lists in the Bhagavatam. And then after, I think it's the first list, Sutta Goswami says, actually the number of avatars is unlimited. Well, he says there are as many as there are waves in a river. So anybody want to go out and count waves in a river? What are you doing, Prabhu? I'm counting waves in the river to see how many avatars. The idea is they're countless. We have an interesting situation here. On the one side, there seems to be a definite designation who is an avatar. There are so many then categories of avatars. And on the other side, we have this idea that they're unlimited. And the idea that there are unlimited avatars could be a problem. Why? Because it kind of opens the floodgate for any, we say in English, Tom, Dick, or Harry, to say, I'm an avatar. Or, if not to directly say, to allow his or her followers to say, this is an avatar. One of the qualifications of an avatar, according to verse 354, is that one does not say, I am an avatar, or I am God. That's a good sign of a disqualification. So, if we see you going around with a T-shirt that says "I'm an avatar," you're finished. You've just disqualified yourself. In case you were thinking of, maybe someone wants to make business by printing T-shirts. "I'm an avatar." It could be popular because people like that idea. But this is a disqualification to advertise oneself. That's one disqualification. But then, so what else? How do we understand who is an avatar, who is not? And of course, we will say very quickly, it is described in Shastra who is avatar. And then we say there are these lists, and these lists tell some details about who they are and what they do. So if you can do any of those things, Srila Prabhupada, one of Prabhupada's favorite identifiers of Krishna as the Supreme Lord is that he lifts Govardhan Hill. And he says, so if anybody can do that, then we will consider. So different lists and qualifications in Shastra. But again, there's this statement that the number of avatars, I almost said incarnations, is unlimited. In Christianity, of course, they say, no, there's only one. There's one incarnation, and he's not an avatar, he's an incarnation. Anyway, so I think this is interesting because I mentioned a few days ago, I was in China where I went to one of the major centers of Taoist culture, and they have their divinities, celestials, who are actually going in the opposite direction. They're going, instead of from up to down, they're going from down to up. They are different persons who have performed austerities, and they're understood to have attained perfection. And then people come and they offer worship to them. And how they offer worship is kind of interesting. We happen to be in this major center during a Taoist festival. I think it was a monthly festival. Very colorful priests in incredibly bright, multicolored robes. And kirtan was going on. All kinds of interesting instruments. And the priests were chanting all kinds of mantras, and they were offering fruits and flowers to this very large deity in this temple. And the way they would offer the flowers was a lot of fun, actually. I was thinking we should try this. They would do a little dance. They would take one flower in one hand and another flower in the other hand. And it was one priest at a time. These were all male priests. And as the lively kirtan was going on with drums and bells and gongs, they would do this little dance for about a minute. And then they would shuffle off, and the next priest would come with two other flowers, and he would go around and spin around. And the point is that they have their divinities. Buddhism started out, or it seemed to start out, with one Buddha, right? Gautama Buddha, who appeared in, where did he appear? In Gaia. No, that's where he had his realization. He appeared in what's now Nepal, I think they say. Anyway, after some centuries, couple of centuries, generally they say, what became known as Mahayana Buddhism, started to say, why one Buddha? So many Buddhas. Thousands, millions, unlimited. Not only Buddhas, but bodhisattvas. And there's something called Buddha nature. Everyone's got it. All we have to do is realize it, and then we can become Buddhas. Cool. Maybe you can't become God. In the Hare Krishnas, you can't become Krishna, but if you join the Buddhists, you can become a Buddha. And bodhisattvas, so many bodhisattvas, those who make, as I understand, a kind of vow that I will not seek nirvana, liberation, until everyone else in the world has attained liberation. One of these is understood one present form of one of these bodhisattvas is considered to be the Dalai Lama. He is considered to be Avalokiteshvara, who is a kind of form of compassion. He appears sometimes with 1,000 arms in the iconography, which are arms which are reaching out of compassion. In China, Avalokiteshvara becomes Guanyin, and he becomes she. Male becomes female. I think it's interesting thinking about identifying incarnations or avatars or bodhisattvas. You probably know there's this procedure that the Dalai Lama is selected. There's an interesting process, a kind of mystical process, where the next Dalai Lama kind of proves himself as a small child by identifying certain objects and various other examinations. So this has been going on, I don't know how many generations, but as you know, there's a bit of tension between the Dalai Lama and the Chinese government. And the Chinese government has said that the next Dalai Lama we are going to identify. So again, the question of, how do you identify and who is qualified to identify? I think it's interesting that here in these verses it says, Munigana, who knows, who identifies the avatars? Munigana, Muni, it's a very general term. Something we might translate it as sage. So then the question becomes, well, who's qualified as a sage? Rupa Goswami, of course, made an attempt to systematize all this understanding about avatars by writing the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, in which he goes through all the different categories. There are, of course, Leela avatars. There are the Guna avatars, and so on and so forth. By this, one can, his argument would be, one can be sure of who is going to be an avatar and who is not. But then, I always want to make things complicated. One of the categories that he gives is Shakti Abesha. Now, what does Shakti mean? Power. And what does Abesha mean? Invested. Exactly. Yes? So, invested with power. Right? So, the Shakti Abesha avatars are descendants who have been invested, they are understood to be jivas who have been invested with some particular special power. And there are a few examples given. A handful of examples. The question remains open. Who might be identified as a Shakti Avesha avatar? We've heard sometimes it's said Srila Prabhupada was a Shakti Avesha avatara. Well, we may say, hey, why not? Just have a look at what he did, what he accomplished. If that's not Shakti Avesha avatara, I don't know what is, we may say. And others may come along and say, yes, that's all right. And so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so, and this Nobel Prize winner, and that fast runner, and who else? So then we might ask, what is What is the benefit of this term avatara? What do we get out of it? It's a kind of odd question, I know. You're sort of wondering, what do you mean, what do we get out of it? But I'm trying to, you know, shake us up a little bit to think about what it is that we, you know, kind of take for granted, the idea of avatar. I would say one thing that the notion of avatar does for us is it helps us, it gives us a way, and we would say the most important way, to structure history. Life goes on, you know, from one day, one year, one era to another. What is happening? What is important in the course of time in the world? We say what's important, what's significant is that the Lord appears. And why does he appear? That's also an explanation of why the word avatara is useful. It helps us to understand, to make a meaningful link, a connection with a realm which we understand exists and which is entirely beyond this world. In other words, the Lord makes the connection for us. How does he do it? One way he does it is he appears. Queen Kunti, in her prayers, she's wondering, she is expressing her amazement about the Lord, the purposes of his appearance. Some say, she says, you appear for this reason. Some say you appear for that reason. Some say you appear to give us all opportunity to hear and chant about you. Some say you appear in order to destroy the demoniac kings, and so on and so forth. Different purposes are there of the Lord, and the general purpose, we understand, is to reestablish what we call dharma. But then what is dharma? That's another complication. The Bhagavatam starts out, not verse 1, but verse 2, dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. The Bhagavatam is about making a distinction between dharma and what it calls kaitava dharma, that which is not dharma, cheating dharma. And then later it elaborates so many types of a dharma. But we also associate, we understand that avatar is inseparable from another difficult idea, and that is lila. The Lord's appearing in this world is not his afterthought. It's not that the Lord creates the world, realizes, didn't quite make it right this time. Things are a bit messy. I better go fix it up. That's not the idea. Rather, it is his lila. It's an extension, you could say, or it is a fulfillment of his lila of creation. Especially in the Sri Vaishnava tradition, it's emphasized that creation is the Lord's lila. And then, as part of that lila, the Lord appears in this world. And as he's appearing, he is making opportunity. He's not just reestablishing dharma by killing those who are adharmic. He's making opportunity for us to connect to the Lord. The Lord connects the spiritual world with the material world for us. He does it in amazing ways, and again, Queen Kunti expresses this. In fact, she mentions what we're celebrating this month, Damodar Lila. She says, This is really amazing, that here you are, a little boy, appearing as a little boy, although you are all-powerful, you're appearing as this little boy, appearing to be fearful. I don't get it. This is bewildering to me. But she's not bewildered about whether Krishna is God. She's not bewildered. She's bewildered in the sense that she's amazed. She is finding it wonderful that the Lord can be as he is. So the question remains, what about all these forms of divinity that we hear about in other traditions? To what extent is there any reality to them at all? Is it completely mistaken? Are they where are those situated who are identifying such persons, personalities as divinities, as what we would call avatars? Where do they stand in relation to the Bhagavatam? Is the Bhagavatam being inclusive, or is it being exclusive? Or is it being both? That's the question I would leave you hanging with as we come near the end of our time. Obviously, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to bring to the fore the essential means of understanding who is avatar by quoting this first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, Jiva Goswami will elaborate what is the definition of Bhagavan. When we understand who is Bhagavan, then we may understand everything else with relation to avatars. But this verse, Janmadyasya Yato, it's saying, okay, you're wondering who is an avatar, who is not. Okay, whatever. Let's start at the bottom. Let's start at the top. Let's start with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What are his swarupa, his personal or essential characteristics, and what are his marginal characteristics? So all of this kind of analysis is being offered, and this is very wonderful indeed. Hare Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Any questions or comments? Yes, Rasa Mandala Prabhu. Yes. You don't want me to just turn it around into another question? Well, I was, again, a few days ago in China seeing the Yangtze River, which is highly polluted. And I wondered, is this a sacred river? Some say that all these rivers are all just extensions of the Ganga. That's a cool sort of way of getting around it. The way the pujaris get around it is, whatever this water is that I have right now in this cup, Gange cha yamune chaiva godavari sarasati narmade sindhu kavari jalesmin sanadim kuru sannidim kuru. May all of you rivers that I've just mentioned please enter into this and become sacred. Well, I think I have to turn it around and ask the question, what do we mean by sacred? Sacred for whom is another question. And I think it's a valid question that typical scholars of religion ask. When you see something, someone, some object, some river, whatever, considered by persons as sacred, who are they? Who considers it sacred? And how has that come about? There may be a history to something being considered sacred. Is there an absolute sacred? Well, we like to understand so, don't we? And we heard yesterday indeed how there are symptoms of the Ganga, its purifying powers, indicating its sacrality. What other sort of qualities might be there? We may ask for a river to qualify as sacred. One could just say, well, it's water. And hey, guess what? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Rasoham apsu konteya. I am the taste of water. And water is, what's our nearby river here? Urdo. Urdo. I thought it was Som. Petit Som. It's very petite. Okay, so our most immediate is this the Petit Som. So is the Petit Som a sacred river? Of course. Huh? N'est-ce pas une question, huh? Okay. So, that's the point that comes to my mind. It's water. Water is, we take water for granted, but go spend some time in a desert for a while. You don't take it for granted, so... Krishna says, I'm that water. I'm the taste in that water. So in that respect, at least, and possibly in other respects, there's one gentleman, I can't say I met him, but I heard him speak a few years ago at one conference. He gave a slideshow, actually, of sacred places around the world. His... sort of mission in life was to go to any and all sacred places in the world, whatever anyone considered sacred, he wanted to go there. And he would photograph and he would spend, his special thing was to spend the night there, if possible, right on top of the point which is most sacred. You know, roll out his sleeping bag, and that's where he's going to sleep that night. Unless the police take him away. So they have this idea of, what is it called? Geomancy? That there are special power points on the planet, or in the planet, around the planet. So it seems there's a lot going on beyond what we see. And that's been noticed by different people. If we think of the Australian Aboriginals with their dreaming, what do they call it? Dreamscape. Anyway, they have a whole kind of sacred geography, which is identified by, let's say, mystical means. So I wouldn't discount it so quickly. I would say something's going on. It's Krishna's planet. It's his water. It's his earth. He's probably got a lot of things going on to give mercy. The Lord appears to give mercy, to give opportunity for all conditioned souls to go back to Godhead. One way or another. Mama vart manuvartante manushya partha sarvasha. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So, thinking at the moment a bit inclusively, that would be my comment. Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.